Hey everybody, Marcus here. I just wanted to very quickly say there's a couple technical issues with this episode where Monet's volume is a lot higher than mine in some spots. I've fixed it the best I can, but there might still be some weirdness. I also wanted to very quickly give a content warning around the 31 minute 45 second mark to about the 33 minute mark. So just for like a minute there, there is a brief mention of sexual assault while we're talking about Invincible. I don't know necessarily that this warning is totally like needed, but I wanted to extend it just in case that bothers anybody. Just you can just skip from 31 minutes to about 34 minutes. Like, it's just a real quick thing because we're talking about something that happens in the comics, and I don't want anybody to be floored by that. So if you're listening, thank you, and hope you enjoy. Thanks. We are back.
Oh my god.
As previously stated, this show exists simply when we want it to.
Literally.
It's literally just like, you'll text me and go, hey, you want to record? And I'll go, yes, let's do that.
They're on our time. Yes. Is the thing.
They are on when our schedules align and we have shit to talk about time.
Exactly.
And a lot of times, I don't have shit to say. So.
Dude, do I?
I am Marcus. That is Monet. We are, this is the Player Advantage, whatever the fuck, podcast.
I don't even know what this is right
what
now.
What show is this? Does it matter?
What show is this? Oh my god. Imagine if that stuck.
Yeah, what show funny. Is this? Yeah.
What show is this? Combination of things.
We are back together here to talk about some stuff.
A lot of stuff. We're gonna talk about a lot of stuff.
Talk about the hit Amazon Prime television show Invincible. We're gonna talk about Spider-Man. We're gonna talk about Mass Effect Legendary Edition, AEW Double or Nothing. But first, we're gonna talk about the X-Men.
The fucking X-Men. So I've been starting to read comics. Finally, after years of Marcus telling me you should read a comic book, you should actually pick something up with your fingers and read it, I obliged. Finally did it. And I decided to start with not only a little bit of Spider-Man, but X-Men and the most recent X-Men stuff. So why did I do that?
Why did you do that? Because before we got started, I was like, I would like mention an X-Men thing and you'd go, what is that?
What's up with that? Because it's there's so much. There's so much.
Almost 60 years of history. And a lot of it is dumb. Like, I love the X-Men. Like, what people, I feel like, don't realize is that until, like, 2013, the X-Men were way more popular than the X-Men were so much cooler than the Avengers. Even when the X-Men were at their, like, dirt worst, the X-Men were more popular and cool than the Avengers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They had all, like, this, like, fucking 12 TV shows and fucking all those movies. And, like, their comics were...
They had characters that were, like, way more interesting, that had cooler powers. Like,
memorable.
Yes, way more memorable. The X-Men were just way cooler than the Avengers for so long.
No one ever cared about Captain America until fucking MCU showed up.
Shit about Iron Man until he was...
Poor Iron Man. Literally.
Like, people cared about Captain America, but people did not give a fuck about Iron Man. Like,
wow, yeah, you're right. They really didn't, because Iron Man was some guy.
Do you know that there was an Iron Man animated series in the 90s?
Yes. I only remember it's terrible. It's awful. I only remember it because it was like tied into the Spider-Man show here and there.
It was tied into the Spider-Man show. It was also tied in to the
X-Men show, right?
To the Fantastic Four show.
Dude. I forgot. See, I didn't even know there was a Fantastic Four show.
Yes.
That's a surprise.
Yeah, the Ghost Rider would show up on those shows too for some reason. Like, there was not a Ghost Rider or Hulk cartoon that I remember, but they would show up in the other shows.
Yeah, it was like in fucking Secret Wars or something.
It was an MCU in like 1995. It was just on Fox Kids.
Literally. They did a fucking Secret Wars event, at one point on Spider-Man. And it was like, hey, Iron Man and like some of the X-Men, I think. I can't remember.
But before we got started, I was gonna explain to you the character that is Psylocke.
See, I know a little bit of Psylocke, unfortunately, from the movie.
Okay, that one movie. I don't know if that movie explains what I'm going to explain. Because I'm pretty sure Psylocke in that movie is just Olivia Munn.
Yeah, it's just Olivia Munn with swords. Yeah. Which is hot, but you know.
So they don't get into the fact that Psylocke, Betsy Braddock, is a white woman trapped in the body of a Japanese woman.
Wait, what? Wait, I'm sorry. Run that by me again for the listeners.
Let me try that one more time. Betsy Braddock is a white woman who has been trapped in the body of a Japanese woman. This went on for over 20 years.
Oh.
Okay. So let me explain.
Oh.
Betsy has been Psylocke. See, Betsy came into existence in 1976. She becomes Psylocke in New Mutants Annual Number 2 in October of 1986. Just double check that to be sure. But she's still Betsy. She's still Captain Britain's younger sister, Betsy.
What?
She's a member of the X-Men. And then she is captured by Matsuo Surayaba, who is a leader within the Hand.
And, oh my god.
And has her switch bodies with his lover, and a Japanese assassin named Quinnen.
This is a lot.
This is
a lot, especially. I understand what these things are.
Yes,
it makes it weirder.
And then she gets brainwashed.
Uh huh.
Then regains her free will by after establishing psychic contact with Wolverine in Uncanny X-Men 258.
Did that when her psychic, that's like when her psychic abilities first show up?
She regains her consciousness, basically.
Okay.
They stay switched. This stays what it is until, okay, so I'm trying to find the exact date of certain things. Because what happens is, Betsy starts dating Cyclops at one point.
Sorry, what? Starts dating Cyclops? Oh yes, my god.
Cyclops.
Oh, what's happening now? Oh, things are happening now.
Quinnen, Betsy's original body, joins the X-Men as Revanche.
Revanche?
Revanche. Like revenge, but French.
Okay.
And then she gets a virus and has that crime boss kill her in Betsy's original body.
That's just...
Yes. So it's like, there's this thing where it's like, who's the original Betsy? Is it Psylocke or is it Revenge? And it's Psylocke is the original Betsy, which was always, I think, clear. But
it would seem to be, yeah.
Yeah. And then Revenge dies in Betsy's body. A storyline that they would use later with Spider-Man and Dr. Octopus, by the way.
I was going to fucking stop. I was going to ask about that. I'm like, was this like early inspiration for the Superior Spider-Man shit?
Yeah, basically.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
And executed not as good.
Yes. And then Betsy remains. Let's see. That was in X-Men Volume 2, Issue 31 and 32. Or Issue 31. That would have been... Tom DeFalco. Baby Initieza. Really. That's who wrote that. That makes sense. Baby Initieza also wrote a really weird run on Robin before the end of the old timeline, which is very weird. When did this issue come out? April of 94.
What?
So Betsy is permanently trapped in this Asian woman's body.
Forever. Maybe.
As of April of 94. Then, early 2019, maybe, this might have been summer 2019, Betsy gets her original body back.
Oh.
Do you want to know how dumb the way Betsy gets her original body back is?
I'm like, excited. I need you to tell me right now.
So Betsy gets her original body back. I don't even have to look this up, because everything else I was going back and double checking so I got all the facts straight. I'm pretty sure I know this story by heart. Betsy encounters like a spirit, like a psychic vampire who like tries to destroy her from the inside, and then using her psychic powers, because like she loses her body. Using her psychic powers that she is merging with these psychic vampires, she builds herself her original body back out of sheer force of will. And then somehow Quentin comes back and takes back her body. It is just Psylocke now. And Betsy's back to Britain.
Oh,
let me go and double check exactly what that is. So, Mystery Madripoor. After Wolverine's body disappears, group of X-Men confronts Magneto. Psychic vampire Sapphire Styx absorbs the entirety of Betsy's soul, leaving her body dead. That's worse. Okay, that is dumber than I thought. Absorbs Betsy's soul. Betsy fights her way back out of Sapphire Styx's mind. Destroys her from the inside, and then uses the remaining soul power to create her original body. So after 25 years,
okay. All
somebody
right.
at Marvel remembers that Betsy Braddock is a white woman.
They said, we gotta get this shit sorted out right now. Right fucking now.
They're like, hey.
We need to get it done yesterday.
Isn't it fucked up?
Hey, so,
basically had this character run around in yellow face for 25 years.
Fucking 25 years. Oh my god, that's fucked up. And that's the beautiful thing about it. Eventually someone fucking notices.
Someone realizes, hey.
Someone's like, this is cringe.
This is pretty bad.
We're posting cringe, guys. We've been posting it for 25 years. Could you imagine posting cringe for 25 years and not even realizing it or forgetting that you were?
They just let her be a Japanese woman for 25 years.
I cannot believe this. I can't believe it. Like, well, I can. Because comics, but like, oh. That was not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that Psylocke. I she's on my team in Ultimate Alliance 3. It's fucking great. I love her a lot. She's so fucking cool. Also, she's wearing yellow face. Everything hurts. Everything is pain.
Comic books. I feel like I should have warned you about this at any point in the last decade.
But probably.
I feel like the thing about comics is think about how dumb something could be, and then imagine it is twice as dumb as that thing. That is comic books. In a nutshell. There is a comic book story. There is a story during, this is one of my favorite comic runs of all time, but I think this story is pretty dumb. During Chuck Dixon's Robin run, where Tim Drake has to help prevent an international incident by assisting freedom fighters in the Ukraine or some shit. And they're like, we use this fucking, this plant. We basically smoke super weed and it gives us super strength during this fight. Cause this girl's like, hey man, keep up. He's like, what do you mean keep up? And she kisses him and blows the smoke, blows like the plant into his mouth.
God, contact high.
Yeah, and he's
or
like,
shotgunned it.
Yeah, she shotguns it. He's like, oh my god, I am so strong. I am so fast. Ah! And he accidentally kills Lady Shiva. And he's like, oh fuck. Oh god. What do I do? Mm-hmm. What do I do? Mm-hmm. And he gives her CPR, which then gives Lady Shiva temporary super strength. And he's like, oh my god, she is going to kill so many people.
Dude, the fucking rules. Okay, that's good. That's good. That's good.
There's also the time that, so everybody knows the death in the family, the Batman story.
Yes, yes.
Is the immediate follow-up to it, which is the Joker becoming the Iranian ambassador to the UN somehow.
And Superman, nope.
Superman going, hey man, you can't whoop the Joker's ass. It'll cause an international incident.
No, that's too much. That's too much. That's too much. You're fucking with me.
I promise you that happened.
Let's see, I gotta Google this. Joker, Iranian ambassador?
Yes.
Oh my god, it finished. It finished my Google search.
I told you!
Oh, it's horrible. Oh my god. What is he wearing?
I'm
proud to speak for the Great Islamic Republic of Iran. Alright.
It feels like they didn't know. They didn't have a plan for if the vote was to kill Jason. It was like, all right, we kill him. What do we do next? How do we explain that Batman doesn't just fucking kill him after that? That's how. That is how.
That's ridiculous.
I think after that, the Joker's not seen again until the Killing Joke, maybe?
Wow. Probably for the fucking best.
Yeah, like, let me see. The Killing Joke came out in 1988. Death of the Family came out in 87, I think. Yeah, it's nuts. But what do you think about what do you think about Dawn of X so far?
So it's a lot. I will say that. I'm not used to Hickman's writing. So it's very, there's a lot. It's very, there's like, what's the word?
The Killing Joke actually came out first, which is very weird.
That's really strange. It's, it's heavy. There's a lot. It's a lot, dude. And I'm not used to that. So when I see, like, I don't know, it's visually, like, because you have the art, which is lovely. I love it. But also, it's, like, the story and the amount of writing. Like, the amount of text in the fucking bubbles I'm like, that's ridiculous. There's so much. And it's also, like, the most recent X-Men comic. And, like you said, it's, like, 60 years of history. So, to have to go back and try to, like, be like, okay, who the fuck is Nimrod? What is that?
Right, and that's the thing about this Hickman run, is that they're like, hey, all the warriors, everybody's here.
Literally every single one of them. And I'm like, okay, so everyone's still alive. Everyone's back. They apparently are immortal now.
Yeah, they have a way to beat death.
Literally. Professor Xavier has a fucking cool suit.
He's got this thing on his... He's just got some robe permanently mounted to his head.
Permanently mounted to his head. He doesn't need a wheelchair anymore, which I'm fucking like, whoa, that's fucking crazy.
I want to say that was something they did before he died.
But
Professor X died, and not only did he die, he was murdered by Cyclops.
I remember hearing about that. He fucking lasers his ass to death. Yes. And it's like, is it the Phoenix or something?
Yes,
or
so like... during Avengers vs. X-Men, which is also both cool and dumb, Cyclops, Emma Frost, Colossus, Magic, and Namor for the Phoenix. But what happens is the Phoenix's power is split evenly between them. Whenever one of them is beaten, its power is split between whoever's left. So when they beat Namor, like when the Avengers beat Namor, his power is split between the remaining four. When Spider-Man beats Colossus and Magic, which Spider-Man beats Colossus and Magic at the same time.
What?
Yeah.
What? I don't know who Magic is, but Colossus?
Magic is Colossus's little sister, who has a soul made out of her own, who has a sword made out of her own soul that is also a portal to hell. She's pretty cool.
Sounds fucking awesome.
Yeah. So Spider-Man basically is able to pit them against each other and beats them. Their power is then split between Emma Frost and Cyclops. Emma has become so powerful that all she has to do is think about something and it happens psychically, like within her mind. If that makes sense. So
yeah, nah.
Like for example, her and Cyclops are having dinner psychically. It like talking and sitting at a table in their minds. Having a drink, having some dinner. And she's like, hey, so I just want you to know I had an affair with Namor because my powers are so strong now that all I have to do is think about something and it happens. So I thought about having sex with Namor. And so...
Stop. 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 Yeah! Stop. Yes! Stop. Stop. Yes! Stop. 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 No. That's fucking crazy.
And so Cyclops goes...
That's awesome.
Yeah. Cyclops goes, huh, interesting. It shoots Emma in the back with his eye beams and takes the rest of the Phoenix Force for himself, goes off the deep end because he's full of the Phoenix now. And goes so mad with power that when Professor X is like, hey, you need to just fucking relax. He's like, fuck you, old man, and kills Professor X.
Oh my god.
But I remember Professor X walking over to him in that scene.
He's like, what the fuck? Scott, please.
Scott, please. Stop trying to kill everyone. And he's like, fuck you. Remember you tried to fuck Jean? And he's like, true.
Fuck you, I'm James Marsden.
he's like, ah, yes, that's for true, Scott. Scott whoops his ass.
True. Fuck, that's ridiculous. So he comes back to Everyone comes back to life. Okay. And he can walk. Yeah. And Magneto has a white costume and looks cool and they're on the same page and they're nice. That white costume is fucking awesome. I was like, ooh. Magneto rules. He's like, I'm good now.
Yeah, he's like, I'm good now. But like, he's worn that for a while and it's so cool. But like, oh, ever since they decided, hey, fuck the red and purple costume, let's give Magneto some other shit. Like, he had this black and like blue one, or black and like silver one that was pretty cool. He's got the white one that's pretty cool. Like, just like, yo, what if we just make Magneto like this cool old man? Because they realize, like, hey man,
literally,
Magneto was right, and they're like, yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah, absolutely. Let's give him a fit.
Yeah, yeah. There's a time he goes to fight Iron Man. He's like, motherfucker, do you realize that I'm the master of magnetism? He's like, yeah, that's why I wear a suit made of carbon fiber. He's like, cool. I'm going to bring the building down around us. I'm throwing cars at you with my mind. Fuck off, Stark.
I fucking love it. I love the tweet. The tweet, like, who would win in a fight, Iron Man or Magneto? Yeah.
It's like, has Tony ever got a filling? Cool. Yes.
It's over. It's over.
Night night. Ripped his lower jaw off.
You want to go night night?
Did you ever go night night?
And he does.
Magneto. Like, I feel like everyone forgot that in X-Men 2, Magneto kills a dude because he's got too much iron in his blood.
It's the fucking coolest shit, too. He fucking lifts his ass up and pulls it all out. Pulls it all out of him.
What I want is your blood. Like, like the Undertaker in 99.
And then he uses that shit to escape, which is even better.
Yes. Oh, God.
It's because Mystique.
You know, X-Men David Hayter wrote off that movie?
I'm sorry, like, David
yes,
Hayter?
Yes.
Stop. Shut David the fuck Hayter up. Are you kidding?
Co-wrote X-Men 1 and 2.
Oh, those are good movies, too.
Yes, and they were written by fucking Solid Snake.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that the craziest shit?
How?
He's a man of many talents.
He sure fucking is. I love that guy. Just another reason to fucking love that guy. I had no idea. Fucking fantastic movie.
You have any other X-Men thoughts?
Just that. What am I at? I haven't gotten to it yet, but I know what happens. It's like it's Wolverine and Nightcrawler. What happens there? Like, they don't have a relationship.
Like a recent
thing? Yeah, it was a recent thing. It was, I don't know if I don't know if spoilers? Spoilers. So like, I haven't gotten to it yet, but like, I've seen a panel around a long time ago, like when this was coming out, like the Dawn of X whatever shit was coming out. And it's and obviously I know it's coming, so I'm just waiting for it because it's gonna hurt. Obviously I know they come back, but it hurts. And it's like Nightcrawler comforting Wolverine before Nightcrawler phases them both into space to take care of some serious situation. And neither of them have any protective gear. And Nightcrawler is just like, just know that you're my friend. I'm paraphrasing. Just know that you're my friend and that I'll see you in the afterlife. Because Wolverine was like, he's not sure what's going to happen after that. Yeah. He's just not sure about the afterlife.
Okay, so...
They're like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, what the fuck's happening here? Quick thing about Nightcrawler. Nightcrawler cannot get into heaven. It's a small canon thing that they might just ignore. But, so, Nightcrawler did die once. Like, he sacrificed himself to save Hope Summers.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's a lot. And what happens is that Nightcrawler gets into heaven because he's a devout Catholic, and it's like, listen, you were the best. And then some shit happens that involves, I think it's the Avengers Unity Squad, which is comprised of members of the X-Men and the Avengers, post Avengers versus X-Men. And they end up in heaven somehow. In the afterlife broadly, I think. And Nightcrawler gives up his place in heaven forever so that he can help his friends.
What the fuck?
Yes. He comes back to life on the condition that he cannot go back to heaven.
Real friends, how many of us?
How many of us have them?
Literally.
Wow, eternal paradise, but my friends are in trouble, so.
So bye.
You gotta let me go down there, big man.
Big Goku vibes.
Yeah. Okay.
That's fantastic. Yes. That's a really nice little. I hope they stick to that because that's a really cool little.
Little wrinkle to his character.
Absolutely. That's fucking cool.
I just hope they reference it again at some point.
Maybe. Hickman's doing everything now, so it seems like he will.
Yeah.
Please read it. Please read Dawn of X, Powers of X. I wouldn't recommend it necessarily, like as your first one, because I'm very confused, but it's fucking awesome. Yeah, it's
dive back into there.
It's awesome.
Something we both dove into recently, which maybe we're a little late to talk about this.
A little.
Our schedules didn't line up, so.
No.
Invincible.
Oh my god, oh my god. Finally, I'm so excited to talk about this, because it's been weighing on my mind for weeks now. And
Think, Mark. I've seen so many variants, and it's like, you're fighting so you can get coochie from a girl who believes that crystals have magic powers. Think, Mark.
Yo, that's fucking great. I love the SpongeBob one. How many times do we have to tell you this, old man?
How many times do we have to teach you this lesson, young man?
It's fucking amazing. That show, like, I put something out on Twitter being like, should I like read the comic? You know, it's Robert Kirkman, which, you know, he could be iffy most of the time. Mm-hmm. But he has good solid like premises. It's just how he goes about it. So like I was like, okay, maybe I should like read it. And someone was like, maybe not. Because the show has done such a good job of modernizing it that if you go back and you read like the edgelord shit going on in that, it'll probably ruin it won't ruin the thing for you, but it'll skew your perspective just a teensy bit about it. Still, fucking phenomenal show. It's definitely, I think it's like the best show I've watched this year.
And like the thing is about Invincible is like the little bit I know about the comic. They have done such a good job of taking what should, like, because like you said, edgelord shit. There's a lot of
yes.
As much as there's a lot of good writing in Invincible, there's a lot of like, we are trying to shock you things going on.
Exactly.
Hey, we had our hero get assaulted. It's like, which?
Yeah, I heard about that.
To be fair, this is not the only comic that's done that. For God's
sake,
Nightwing has a story where that happens.
Yeah, it's not even. It's not even. Oh my god.
Yeah, it's worse in Nightwing's case. Not to totally tangentialize, we're gonna go right back. But I just want to say it's worse in the case of Nightwing when that happened, because it was the writer's self-insert character doing it.
No, really?
Yes.
You gotta be fucking kidding me.
Yeah, it was the Tarantula, who is a self-insert stand-in for Devin Grayson, who is the writer of Nightwing at the time, who I'm pretty sure Devin Grayson is a pen name. And like she's like a really big fan of Nightwing, and decided to have her self insert character sexually assault Nightwing.
Oh my God.
Yes. For what?
And for what?
And she tried to play it off as like a romantic thing, and then like where she tries to. You might have told me this.
You might have brought this up.
I've mentioned this before.
I'm like, I was going to say, I feel like this feels very, they try to get married and then what happens?
Nightwing goes, hey, fuck this, and leaves.
Yeah, no, you have brought this up before.
Like, she's like, she like tries to get a marriage license, and he's like, fuck that. Like, they're in the line at the courthouse, and he's like, what the fuck am I doing?
Bye.
And then Tarantula gets horribly murdered.
Oh, good for her.
Because a few years later, Gail Simone decides, you know who sucks?
It's fucking awesome.
The fucking Tarantula. And has the Tarantula murdered by like 70 villains at the same time.
That's awesome.
I like that character. It never comes back. It's never referenced again. Ed rules. But Invincible, the show is a fantastic adaptation, and the things that I know that get changed, I think are very welcome changes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Starting with the fact that Amber is not a white woman.
Oh my God. When
Amber,
I found out,
yeah, that Amber's switched white that. Yep.
Like, oh, I see what you're doing. And then, like, I see the show. Or, like, I'm seeing the show. I'm like, oh, okay, the difference is, oh my God, Amber's black. This is fantastic.
Because, like, I would not have known that they changed her.
Me neither. They did a really good job. They made his friend gay.
Yes.
Which maybe his friend was gay. I don't remember. I don't even know if he was gay in the comics. Maybe. I think he might have been. Regardless, I do think I'm glad that Mark's reaction to his friend being gay is, oh, good for him and not you, gay boy.
There's never like a coming out scene, which it's interesting that within a space of, let's say, 20 years, so 20 years ago, a show like this couldn't have come out for a number of reasons, but a character like William would have alluded to it, maybe.
Because,
like, Richie from Static Shock is gay. Like, that character in the comics, his comic counterpart, Rick, is gay. He comes out in, like, issue 8 of Static.
Oh, my God.
Like, it's early on. In the show, they wrote him, like, the writers wrote him with him being gay in mind, but could never say it. So, instead, they made him the guy who compensates, like, who's closeted and compensates by being, like, overly into girls.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, that girl's super hot. And it's like, do you know that, Richie? So, to go from that, a character that you can't, having a character 20 years ago, the same, who occupies the same space.
Yeah, absolutely.
As the hero's best friend, as one of the only people who knows about his secret, to have that character 20 years ago in Richie, who can't come out, you can't say Gear is gay, right?
Yeah. To
William now, a character who does not have a scene where he comes out, who does not have a big, there's no big trauma for being gay that is foisted.
Absolutely not. It's very organic in how it comes off. Like, the first time he brings up being gay is, like, I think talking about how hot Omni-Man is, which,
yes,
it's true. He's not wrong. I don't think he is.
Yeah, but he's just saying it to Omni-Man's son.
Yeah, he doesn't realize it.
Like, dude, don't talk about how you want to fuck my dad, please.
Yeah, doesn't even, like, he probably figured just, oh yeah, I probably shouldn't be horny on Maine. But like, obviously finding out later on.
Like, oh my God, of course your dad is Omni-Man.
Jesus. That's fantastic. And I'm glad that William is such a good character. He's really fun. He's so good. The thing
is, William is a character.
Yes. Yes. Like, it's crazy. He has his quirks. He has his flaws. He has emotions.
He is more than just Mark's gay best friend.
It's wonderful. And Amber is more than Mark's love interest.
Yes.
You know?
She is more than the two stereotypes they could have put her into.
Dude, they totally could have.
Made her just his girlfriend, or just like a sassy black girl, and
they don't
make her either of those. Like, no. A defining characteristic of hers is that she's extremely thoughtful.
Extremely thoughtful. Extremely, like, she
volunteers at a soup kitchen so literally that everyone knows her name there.
Like, and not just like just how she is and how she, you know, when it comes to how thoughtful she is, she expects the same of Mark. So when all this shit happens and he has to go be invincible, she gets upset about that because he's not being thoughtful. Well, not just like not telling the truth, but also not being thoughtful. It's lovely. It's fucking, it's so good. Also, can we talk about the cast?
Yes.
This cast is crazy.
The cast, so much fucking money on that cast.
Dude, it totally, like, there's an episode where the animation is very clearly, like, not as good as the other episodes. Like, not as, like, I think it's, like, the fifth episode or something, and you go to watch, like, the first episode, and, like, it's night and day. And it's all because of the fucking cast. All that cast. Also, probably they had to, like, some budget for, like, the last episode and stuff. But, dude, I'm on the treadmill and I'm walking and I'm like, oh, you know, might as well watch this episode of Invincible. You know, I got time to kill. I'm watching it. It's the episode where Invincible helps Marshall Ali's character.
Yes. And it's like, is that Marshall Ali?
Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck?
That show's cast is nuts because every few minutes I'm like, is that blank? And it is every time.
Yeah. I'm like, Jeffrey, is that the guy from Burn Notice?
Oh my God. No, I'm sitting there, I'm like, is that Seth Rogen?
Is that Michael Dorn? Is that Worf from The Next Generation?
Oh my God, that is.
When I literally, like, I ran upstairs and I told Al. When he's playing Battle Beast, which is fucking sick.
Yeah. Like, Battle Beast? That's just Brock Lesnar, yeah?
Literally just Brock Lesnar and a lion and mixed together with, like, the ideals of a fucking Klingon. Like, literally. Like, that's why they must have cast him. Because he's a fucking, he acts like a Klingon. He's like, there's no honor in this fight because you're fucking weak. That's it. So I'm gonna leave now. Like, it's amazing. Amazing. You have Zachary Quinto in this?
Yes. Who, yes. Okay. I was hoping we could get to Robot somehow.
Oh, no, yeah, we're getting to Robot. We have Robot to talk about Robot.
Is so fucked.
Oh, it's so much. Thank you so much. Robot's a lot.
There's so much going on with that guy. What the fuck?
For one, like, he's not really a robot.
Yes, he's obviously, just a dude.
He's just a little guy.
He's a 30-year-old man.
He's a 30-year-old man, like, stuck in, he has, like, what, this ailment, and he's, like, yeah. His body's, like, not fully developed, but
he's a genius.
Smart as shit. He's fucking super smart. He can command all these robots, he's a robot himself, yada yada, and, you're like, oh, this is cool. You know, he's part of, like, what is it? What's it called? The Teen Team?
The Teen Team?
Awful. Yeah. Awful name. Yeah. Awful name.
So I love that they don't give a fuck and will just, like, yes, we are taking the names of things you know and changing them.
Queens of the Globe. Okay, we get it. Very, very Teen obvious.
Team. Which
Teen
is
Team.
Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Darkwing, who is Batman, who is from Dark Moon City, a city where it is, oh, is it Dark Moon City or Midnight City? It's Midnight City.
I think it's Midnight City. He's from
Midnight City, a city cursed to permanently be at midnight.
Dude, that's fucking awesome. Like, that's the coolest shit
ever. I love that as a gimmick. That rule.
Ever. It's, and obviously we're going to talk, we will eventually talk about, like, the scene. The first episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where obviously things actually start happening. You're like, oh, this is pretty cool. It's just a fucking show. It's just a it's just a little cute little super. Oh.
Oh.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
No. Yeah.
Oh, he did that. Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. Rudy.
Yeah, robot. Rudy. Yes, Rudy. He stole my whole fucking flow. Word for word, bar for bar. I'm sorry. I was going to wait for you to get into the thing before I said that, but I couldn't resist.
Why the fuck does he look like me?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. I love Rex's reaction the first time.
Dude, it's hilarious. What the fuck? The guy who plays him just, like, is so good at being upset.
I never pronounced his last name right. Jason Mazzucchi.
Me neither.
Who... I love that he always plays like some kind of unhinged jackass.
Like he's born for that role.
Because he also plays Pimento in Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yes.
And he is Derek on The Good Place.
Oh my God, that's right.
He's great at just being out of his fucking mind.
And yes.
And this time he's not even insane. He's just an asshole.
He's just a serious asshole.
He is the kind of guy to cheat on his girlfriend with his friend who can with their friend, I should say. Their collective friend who can clone herself because he wants to have a threesome with the same girl.
Awful. It's so bad, dude. I was like, you're bugging. You're literally.
Like, what the? Who does that?
Who better?
Who better? Who better? Now that's Omni-Man.
Oh, no. Yeah,
Omni-Man is... He's just doing Canyon shit the whole time.
Yo, literally.
Think, Mark. Who better than Canyon? God, Omni-Man, but he's just... Invincible, but it's just... Everyone is a character from mid-90s to early 2000s WCW.
Oh, fuck yes. Fuck yes.
The new Guardians of the Globe are just the new blood.
Yep. Who's Omni-Man?
Oh, he's Scott Snyder.
There it is.
Like, Hogan is the... Actually, no, he'd be Hogan.
Oh, yeah, he would be Hogan. Oh, of course yeah, he would be. He's Hollywood Hogan. Fucking annihilates it. All of the new blood.
Yeah, turns into, like, suddenly becomes revealed as a bad guy, doesn't care about anybody, he's a real piece of shit.
Real piece of shit, son. I don't know where that came from.
What?
Oh my God. Shout out to Pinchente, everybody.
Thank Mark.
I want you to thank Mark, son. Thank.
In fact, what do you have in 500 years, you mealy mouth son of a bitch?
I just stomped in mud only and walked you dry across the goddamn subway, son. Well, why would you do that? What?
What? Actually, yeah. Fuck it. He's not Hogan. He's 2001 Steve Austin.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
He's you know, Austin turned heel suddenly to the surprise of everyone at WrestleMania 17.
Yes, he did. Showed
that he has no respect for women. Remember how Austin and Triple H used to beat the shit out of Lita? What was that? Oh my God,
the fucking chair. Dude, the fucking chair shots.
She's like, wait, please don't murder my boyfriend and his brother. And then they're like, bitch, you can get it too.
Thanks, Lita, thanks. I got a chair with your name on it, and I'm going to say it 16 times.
You're throwing yourself on Matt Hardy. What do you have in 5 years? Thanks, Amy.
Stop. Matt Hardy. Adam freaking Copeland, son.
Oh, my God. If that joke does not make sense, please look up the Matt Hardy Edge feud. Matt Hardy Lita Edge love triangle. There's actually a really good video on it. I want to say, I don't remember the channel that did it. But yeah, there's a video that's just like, it's like 20 minutes explaining that whole storyline.
So fucking crazy.
Oh my God. Matt Hart, it's crazy that Matt was the base, and then... Because, like, yeah, she cheated on him, but, like, Matt started shit-talking a cutout of her on his, on the internet for money!
Yep. Yep.
He was like, time to play a game called Wake Up and Tell the Fucking Truth.
My God. Like, that's the bottom line.
Oh, God. Anyway, Invincible.
Invincible, yes.
Sorry, we did the thing.
It happened. we're talking about Robot.
We were talking about Rudy. That guy. It's like, guy. Oh my God, all these people are getting hurt and dying. And he's like, yeah, but I made a new body so I could get a girlfriend.
Literally.
So...
Fucking like...
I made a body that looked like a teenage version of Rex so that I could reasonably date Monster Girl, who is 25 but looks 12.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
There's a lot to unpack in that.
A lot to unpack. You got time?
You got time, pal? Speaking of clones, did you notice that in every scene the Mahler twins are in, a Run the Jewel song plays?
Yes, I did, and I love that.
Like, fucking at first love I was that. Like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. You put these guys here, and then it just kept happening. I was like, that's a weird. That seems suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, this was a very deliberate choice. We wanted to put RTJ in all these scenes for some fucking reason. All right,
love that shit.
Yeah.
Best scenes of Invincible. What would you say?
Best scenes.
Best scenes. We'll start from the beginning.
Start from the beginning. Yes, that that scene at the end of episode one. Because like you can tell something's off about Omni-Man. It's like what's up his ass?
He's not happy.
Mark starts getting his powers, and it's like Omni-Man seems pissed off about it.
He's like, fuck.
He socks his son hard as fuck in the chest.
As he's like, oh, sorry.
Sorry, I forgot how strong I was. It's like
that's the beautiful thing about it. You can totally rewatch this season. And now that you know, you can pick up on the smaller things.
Just watch that first episode again. Because the reveal happens after the end of the first one. Where it's like, all right, I know that Omni-Man's like a dickhead. But like that first episode, it becomes very clear. Because it's like Mark starts getting his powers, and it's like, all right, playtime's over.
Yep.
Like, all right, we got to get this kid ready, because it's game time.
It's game time. Yeah, it's a lot, that scene. It's a lot.
It's so
apparently much. Apparently in the comic, it's a lot more decisive, though. He's very fucking quick and just kills all of them.
It's like two pages, if that, where it's like, hey, what's up? Bap, you're all dead.
Literally, this they have like more of a chance.
They might run it back.
I was like, I loved it. They had to spend the first half. I ain't gonna lie. It was solid. It was really solid, and it was fun. And then obviously,
like the moment that they all get there and he pops out of the shadows,
he tries to fucking knock Morrel's head off. But
yeah, and it's not even like. Hey, what are you doing here, Omni-Man? He shows up and he's like, huh, you're wondering why I called you all here. He just jumps out. It's like, all right, let's get to it. Dude. Element of surprise. Sneaky stab attack at the first start of the second round.
Dead ass. One detail that got me was they clearly set it up. It was, what's his name? Fucking Red Russian? Red Rush?
Red Rush, yeah.
Red Rush. That he's sitting down with his girlfriend. He's talking about how, like, what is it? Every moment is like an eternity to him or something?
Yes. Which, like, I didn't think anything of at the first
stuff. Me neither. I was like, all right.
That's like a common thing that's been said with that kind of character. Like, they've had that happen with The Flash. Where he
Quicksilver, too, right?
I have to slow down to talk to anybody because my brain operates so fast. You know, I'm doing all these things at like a rate of like an attosecond. Like, And so I didn't think anything of it because that's a really common thing for superheroes, for like speed-based superheroes, is that sentiment.
Exactly, exactly. And then he gets his fucking head caved in.
Yes.
And it takes forever.
Right. In real time, it's probably, it was probably a split second.
Yep.
To him, it felt like forever. To him, it felt like minutes. Felt like
that's horrible. It's like horrifying. So horrifying.
Imagine slowly getting your head crushed for hours.
Oh my god. Oh my god. And obviously everyone else dies in like the fucking craziest way. The way Darkwing dies is fucking hilarious. I was about
to say, the way he gets Darkwing is so...
Because that's exactly what would happen. That's totally what would
happen. He tries to grapple away. He says, ah.
That's Batman versus Superman right there. He fucking like tries to go for a kick and just grabs him.
Hits him twice. Batman fought Superman because it would be... Hey man, I've got all these plans, all these gadgets. He's like, cool, I'm a million times stronger than you.
Literally, he goes free. He's like, I'm gonna kick you. All right, cool.
Grab his leg. Bat, bat, bat. Dead.
That's it. And then not only that, throws it at another character and then kills that character.
Yes. The way War Woman gets it, I got upset.
Me too. I was really sad about that, actually. I liked War Woman a lot. I was like, oh.
Why did you give her the fucking fatality? What the fuck?
Like, that looked fucked up.
Anytime somebody gets that, like the neck snap, head turn backwards,
She literally did that, too. She went, Awful. Beautiful scene, I gotta say. Would watch again. I probably will eventually. Another one would probably be the Battle Beast scene where he fucking just annihilates the shit.
Yeah, the other one is Battle Beast.
Fucking Michael Dorn killing Battle Stephen Beast Ewan.
Versus Invincible. The way he hits him and Invincible's body pops back up with a big open wound.
Bounces. Fucking bounces.
Just kind of sat there like, oh no.
I thought they killed him.
I was like, did they just fucking kill their protagonist?
Before that happened, I was like, okay, someone's going to come in. Someone's going to like stop it. Or like someone's going to hit him before it happens.
Or like somebody will stop it. Nope.
Mm-mm. And Omni-Man's there watching.
Yes!
He's like, oh shit. He's getting washed right now.
He's like, I told him. It's the only way he'll learn.
Fucking huge, awful, scary wound. And then, what, Monster Girl gets fucking destroyed.
Oh my god. Face hanging off.
Oh, it's fucking awful. It's fucking awful. And Balby's just like, alright, bye, you guys all suck.
Yes! He shows up, whoops everybody's ass and says, this shit is boring, and leaves.
Yeah, oh my god, you just explained Steve Austin's character.
Yes! He's also Brock Lesnar. Like,
also, yep. Yep.
It's
Jeffrey Donovan's character is Heyman.
Yes. The way I can explain it is, you remember they were doing, it was Hulk Hogan's birthday on Raw.
And Brock, oh my god, stop.
And Brock shows up and he looks Hogan in his eyes and goes, party's over, grandpa. That was Battle Beast talking to Black Samson. He's
stop, literally.
It beats all of their asses and then says, this bores me. And leaves.
He's like, damn, I was really excited.
I thought I was going to have some fun today. Nope, you dudes suck. So I'll see y'all later.
So much for Earth's Greatest Warrior. I'm out of here.
Like,
thanks a lot.
That seems supposed to be like, all right, we're a team now. New Guardians of the Globe. And they get their asses whooped.
Washed. Definitely the old Guardians of the Globe would have had it. But it just shows how...
Like, hey, a lot of us have been heroes for a while, but we've never had to work together, so we'll make it work.
Yep.
One little detail that I just remembered is,
At one point, somebody, I think Rex, says to Kate, he's like, I don't know which one of you, it's like, oh yeah, it's not like she's the real Kate when Eve catches him. He's like,
yeah.
It's the real Kate. And she's like, we're all the real Kate.
Yeah.
And so my thought was like, man, every time one of those Kates dies, all of them feel it.
Yep.
Like the original Kate has felt herself die like a million times.
Oh my God. And I never picked up on that until you said something. Jesus. And they all die in some crazy ways, too.
She dies so many fucking times.
Dies in, like, scary fucking ways.
Which is, like, good when you have a character who you can do that with.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then, like, okay, they aren't really dying, but they are dying.
Yes. Like, the Immortal dies twice. The Immortal was Abe Lincoln!
The Immortal was indeed Abe Lincoln. He's died millions of times, but he always comes back because he's immortal, you know? Even after what happens in the last episode, I'm sure he'll be back.
Him coming back, going, fuck this control shit, I have to kill Omni-Man, and then dying again?
Yep. Mm-hmm. He's like, let me just eat this guy one more time.
Omni-Man's like, would you fuck off, Pop?
Again? He fucking just washes him, cuts him in half. What's another good scene? Obviously, we're going to talk about the last scene. We'll talk about, not the last scene, but the last fight.
The last fight with Omni-Man and...
That
fight is great, because...
That was fantastic.
That's how you do the you can't save everyone thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have him trying desperately and just physically unable to do it.
Yep.
Like, he's trying so hard. Like, he's not ignoring the damage. He's not going, you can't save everyone. He is trying so hard, and he is not experienced enough. He is not strong enough to save everyone.
Nope, not one bit. And I would have gotten upset, not upset, but I would have been like, oh, that's weird, if he even got one good shot in. And he didn't. Got a good shot in.
It is a 30-minute squash match.
Yep. He's literally washed from the moment it starts.
From the moment he says, I don't give a shit about Viltrum, it's like, all right, get fucked.
Yeah.
And then Omni-Man just fucks him up.
He's like, the subway scene, obviously. They really did that.
That's fucking... so fucked.
It's so fucked up. I was floored. I was so
floored. What I think about more though is the scene before that.
Oh my God.
Yes, where they where he's trying to stop the building from falling.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Yes,
that's fucking horrible. I was like, I think I paused it. I paused it on one of those scenes because I was just like, this is so long.
Yeah, I was like I had to get up and go do something. I was like, this is
you know it's good when you gotta fucking pause and walk away for a minute. Too much.
What do you think about to circle back to the characters? What do you think about the reveal that Amber knew? Because I'm kind of two minds about it.
The reveal of who?
That Amber knew that he was invincible.
Oh! I am of two minds about that too. On one end, I'm like, it's like I can understand because it's like, yeah, maybe he should have told her.
Yes,
maybe, but also he had good reasons to not want to tell her.
Right. It lends credence to the idea that superheroes should not date regular people.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Like...
No, that'll probably happen for Invincible at some point.
Yes, I do think that they're going to pull the trigger on putting him and Eve together.
Yeah, absolutely.
Future seasons.
But, they got to.
I think that... So, like, on the one hand, she's like... She knew the whole time. Or not the whole time, but I think she knew at the very least since the Battle Beast fight. since he ended up
in the
I think she figured it out then. Like, when Eve is like, look, he loves you. He got in a he's in trouble. I gotta go. I think she kind of pieced it together there that, like, if not earlier, I think she might have even figured it out, like, when he went to Mars.
Yeah, yeah. Like I don't know if they're vague about when it was. They probably are.
She says she's known for a few weeks.
Oh, my God. So it could have been at any of those points.
Right.
He was pretty bad at hiding it.
He's terrible at hiding.
Terrible at hiding it.
He, so, like, she knew where he was when they got into the fight at the university.
Yes.
Like, she is aware that that is him. So she sees him in front of her fighting this thing to the death. And then she's, like, yelling at him, like, where were you? And it's like, you knew where he was. It just feels inconsistent, you know?
It like, definitely.
I totally understand her being mad that he lied to her.
Yeah. 100%.
I can see her being madder when she figures out what's going on and then he still doesn't tell her. But I feel like that scene in particular feels weird.
It does. When you think of it, because, like, unless they in the writing put, because they clearly don't, but if they like pointed it out, like, this is where she found out. This is when she found out. And it was after the, like, yeah.
Yeah.
If it was after that, then yeah, okay, it makes, like, sense.
Maybe that should have happened earlier, but, like, her okay. knowing and then going, where were you? In front of people.
It's
like, do you want him to say in front of these people who don't know, I was fighting him because I'm invincible?
It really bothered me. And obviously, like, I know, like, I'm of two minds, but my mind leans more towards, like, what do you want from him?
Yes, what do you want him to do?
What do you want him to do?
He's, in this moment.
He's kind of like, he's in a horrible fucking position as it is. Like, with his friend finding out without him wanting to.
Right.
That you're not only did you find out without him with him not wanting you to, but you're also mad at him for it. It's off. And I don't, you know, I'm leaning more towards this is, it's very silly of her to be that way.
Yeah.
You know, when the guy is literally, I feel like, as good as the show is. Yeah, no, he literally, on multiple occasions.
Yeah,
he's very, very near death.
Fighting a Tiger Man.
Fucking, I don't even know what it was. It was a mace. Oh, yeah, it was a mace. Fucking mace. And he also tried to fucking fight evil cybernetic robot thing.
Yeah.
Like, and fucking fought his dad.
I feel like.
Lost.
She had the right to be mad, but I feel like maybe yelling at him in front of people, where were you, and expecting him to be honest about it is a little much.
Second embarrassment.
Because, of course, he's going to lie in that moment.
Yeah, he is. He's like, I ran to get help. I don't fucking know what you
want. Yeah, like.
I honestly think. Oh, you got it.
Hey, they're not telling this person. It's like inherently like a lie of omission, or in some cases, a straight up lie of like where you were, what you were doing. And so it's like, it's kind of fucked up to put that other person in this position where you could die and they could just not know.
Yeah, no, it's like with because I've been reading my Spider-Man lore. I've been looking up my little Spider-Man lore.
Let's move on into that, because Spider-Man has a, like, Invincible is very Spider-Man.
Oh, absolutely. Right down to
very Peter Parker.
Oh, totally. Right down to like the problems that he has and how they're building up and how he can't really juggle all of his life with his new life of being a superhero. And like, I dug into my little bit of Spider-Man lore and I found out that there's a story about how Mary Jane tells Peter, he's like, that she's more or less always known.
Yes.
And when he says, I gotta go, and
yeah, I have to leave he suddenly. Makes it,
and he she's like, all right, see you, man.
And yeah, the one that so the Spider-Man thing is interesting because I don't know when it's implied that she figured it out.
Exactly, it's very vague. She but how I guess,
is that? Because you've been reading like Straczynski stuff, like
yes, I have. Yeah, where like they're separated or whatever.
Yes. There is so in the issue where Gwen dies, or the issue after. So the issue where Peter and Mary start to like officially get together is Amazing Spider-Man 122. Gwen dies in issue 121, and Mary Jane goes to comfort Peter in 122. I think you could go back even to there to 1970, and Mary Jane probably knows then.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, reading that issue with the idea that Mary knows that he's Spider-Man changes a lot of the perspective on that issue.
That's funny. I think that very those two issues are somewhere in this house as we speak. I'm not kidding.
Oh, I have a hardcover collection.
What the fuck?
Yes. I have a hardcover. It's called The Death of the Stacys. So it is the issues where Gwen's dad dies, where Captain Stacy dies, and the issues where Gwen dies. The issue where Gwen dies, the issue immediately following it.
Oh, wow.
And the thing about that issue, is particularly 121, is that Gwen... Like, they tease on the cover, someone close to Peter is going to die in this issue. And it is set up so that you think that it's going to be Harry.
Really?
Yes. Because I think this is around the time they were doing the thing where Harry had a drug problem. Because around this time, late 60s, actually, I think they did this again in the 80s. But they would do this thing where... Hey, we want to have a character make a point about a drug or some sort of social issue or something like that. So in the late 60s, early 70s, this is 1972, this came out, I think. It was Harry Osborn. Harry, I want to say, had a heroin problem. It was either heroin or, no, it was Roy Harper had a heroin problem. I think Harry had like a pill problem. Like Harry had a drug problem and that issue opens in such a way that you think that Harry is going to die because of his drug issue. And then in the 80s, DC did it with... In the 80s, DC did it with Roy Harper. Is it the 80s? Let's see. Roy Harper... Drug addiction, yes. Yeah, Roy had a heroin problem when he was Speedy. Let's see. Green Lantern, Green Arrow, number 85. Sorry, I'm doing research live on air, folks.
Love it.
But yeah, they would do this where it's like this character has a... has a drug problem, and they did it with Harry, and so the people on the cover they imply it might be, it's Harry, I think Gwen is on that cover, but it's like Harry, Aunt May, I think is the other person they want you to think it is, and then they're like, surprise, it's Gwen.
And what the fuck?
Yes, they kill off Gwen Stacy, and... You know the reason they killed off Gwen?
Why did they? They want to get like Mary Jane and Peter a little bit more closer together.
Put Harry, Peter, and MJ together, and they could not think of a way to do that other than killing Gwen.
Damn.
Because I guess they couldn't make Gwen breaking up with Peter make sense.
Did Gwen ever come back in some weird way?
Yes. Okay. Gwen comes back during the clone conspiracy.
What the fuck? Oh, is that the one with like what the I see listeners? I've been like looking into Spider-Man more. Ben Reilly guy? Is that
yes.
That is okay.
So what? I'm right. What do you know about Ben Reilly?
I just know that he was like with the Scarlet Spider, and so that he's a clone of Peter.
Those are the important things you need to know. Ben Reilly, okay. Is a clone of Peter, who thought he was the original Peter, so for a while he replaces Peter as Spider-Man. He's a Scarlet Spider, and then later just becomes Spider-Man, and Peter lives a pretty normal life for a couple years.
Good for him.
And then Ben dies, and Peter becomes Spider-Man again. And then he comes back thanks to the Jackal cloning him. And then Ben becomes the new Jackal and is cloning people. He starts cloning people and bringing them back to life.
Ben Reilly comes back because of a character named the Jackal, becomes the Jackal.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And then he is cloning people from the moment they died. So these people have they essentially are the original person.
I see.
All their memories intact. They know everything that they knew. And so yet Gwen does tell Peter that she knows that he's Spider-Man. She's like, yeah, it all sort of making sense. I started putting shit together. And so I think Peter does get to say goodbye to Gwen. Like, because the clones are unstable and they destabilize and die. And so Gwen dies in Peter's arms again. It's very emotional. That storyline has a great resolution too. Just like the conversation that Peter and Ben have towards the end of that, I think is a really good resolution, because he's like, hey, look, you brought back all these people, but there's one person here that you didn't bring back. He's like, what are you talking about, Pete? He's like, you didn't bring back our uncle. And that's how I know
that you brought back
everybody but Uncle Ben. Because that Uncle Ben would tell you that what you're doing is wrong.
I didn't even fucking think about Uncle Ben.
You can't emotionally handle Uncle Ben telling you that.
So, that fucking rules. That's fucking awesome. If you're anything like me, you'll do this.
Yeah, if you and I, not only are we alike, we are the same person. I consider you my brother. Stop doing this shit. Because I know that you are me. Therefore, you also love Gwen. And that you know this shit's not right.
Exactly. That's awesome. That's fantastic. That's really good writing. Because I was like, "What? This is the what?
Yeah.
The clone conspiracy thing?
Clone conspiracy, yeah.
I see. How many fucking clones? Because I know there's like a clone thing. Or a clone saga.
The original clone saga. There is the ultimate clone saga. There's the clone conspiracy. And there is the most recent incarnation of the clone saga, which is Miles's clone saga.
Yeah. What a fucking segue.
Yes.
Did you plan that? You didn't plan that.
I kind of did as we started talking about it.
Oh, that was good. That was fucking good. Caught me off guard.
The clone saga is what's going on in Miles' book. And I'm a week behind. I have to read last week's issue. But I just would like to say, Miles Morales Spider-Man, the current run, shows me something very important. And that is, if you are going to create a character like a Miles Morales, like a Jaime Reyes, like a Kamala Khan, you need to have somebody who is at least actually familiar with the culture of that character. Right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You have to have, and like, I think characters of color should always be written by people of color, but they should especially be written by people who are from these cultures, or at the very least, like if I'm writing a story about Miles Morales, a black Puerto Rican from Brooklyn, a white dude from Queens shouldn't be writing it.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Like, and that's who created the character, right? Was it like Bendis or whatever?
Actually, I don't think Bendis is from New York. I think Bendis is from Ohio.
Even worse. Yes. Even fucking worse. I want to check
this. Yes, he's from Cleveland. And like, fair, you know, fair play to him. I think he created a good like bed for them to go off of with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But ultimately, I think the character, the guy writing him now is Saladin Ahmed, who is is not black, but at the very least seems to know black people.
Yes.
He is Lebanese.
Wow, holy fuck.
He went to school in Brooklyn. Like he at the very least is like,
he grew up around folks like
he's from Miles Morales. He is from Detroit, and that's what you need to know.
Oh, there you go.
So Miles Morales Spider-Man is phenomenal. And there's a lot of little things in it that it's like, I don't know if Bendis would have thought to do this. I don't know exactly how Ahmed got the idea to do these certain things, but they rule. And like, I mean little things. Like, there's an issue where Miles, his then girlfriend, and his roommate, his other roommate, the one that's not Genki, he has two roommates, Judge and Genki. I want to say Judge is Haitian. I think he's either Haitian or otherwise like Caribbean. He's island people. I don't know exactly where.
Yeah.
So then the three of them ditch school because they go to the boarding school. They ditch school to go to a hip-hop exhibit at an art museum. And Miles is like, we're going to go to the shit. And Miles, Miles is wearing a Burberry shirt, a tank top, and a gold chain.
Oh my God.
Why is Miles dressed like he's going to somebody's fucking baby shower?
Yo, I fucking love it.
But of course he knows what's up. Dress.
Literally.
Miles has a new baby sister named Billy,
who I'm pretty really? Sure
is supposed to be named after Billie Holiday, which keeps with the theme because Miles is supposed to be named after Miles Davis.
Oh, fuck. That's wonderful.
And the other thing is, they finally changed his dad's name, which is nice. Because Miles' dad is named Jefferson Davis, which is a name that's got some history that is not great.
Oh, shit.
Let me pull up exactly. Jefferson Davis was the first president of the, was the first and only president of the Confederate States.
Oh.
Why did they name Miles' dad that? And the thing is, I don't think they thought about it. Like, is what I mean. You need to have somebody who knows these things.
Exactly. Because then you go doing shit like that.
Because they wanted to make the Miles Davis reference without making him Miles Davis.
Yeah.
And that's all that was, ultimately. So they're doing a thing, like, in-universe, he is changing his last name to Morales. Because he's just like, I am tired of this name. I'm tired of the legacy of my family, of who I used to be. So I'm taking your mom's last name, which I
think rules. I think that rules too. Aaron Morales. There you go. Perfect.
And so what they're doing with Miles's clone stuff was there was a villain that kidnaps Miles called the Overseer, and he's just running all these tests. And Miles is like trapped there. He's stuck there for weeks. And then eventually his dad and Uncle Aaron bust him out.
Snap. Okay, Uncle Aaron is around in this. Yes.
Well, he was. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they bust him out, and then a few months later, maybe a year later, another Miles shows up and is like threatening these people, and it's like, what the fuck is Spider-Man doing there? And then Miles and Peter both show up and fight this clone of Miles. Then at one point, I think in the most recent issue, I haven't seen the context of it, but Peter makes a Kilometers Morales joke. So that's how that's going.
Oh my fuck.
Peter says the phrase Kilometers Morales.
Oh my god. I literally forget that Miles and Peter are in the same universe, and they're, yes, like, together and everything.
So it's funny, because they actually started doing a storyline that is, they did the whole storyline, that is based on the fact that Miles is from another universe, and Miles doesn't remember it. So, at the end of Spider-Man 2, the second, Bendis's last, his last Miles story, I think it's his last Marvel story before he left to go do DC stuff.
Oh, he's in DC. He's doing DC stuff now?
Yeah, he's writing Superman now, I think. Or he That's was awesome. Superman, I don't know. So they introduce the original Miles Morales. It's Earth 616's Miles Morales. Who then, at the end of that story, jumps into a portal into another timeline and comes out into what appears to be Ultimate Universe. So they switch places. And they deal with the consequences of that in this storyline. And I think that's really good.
Oh, really, really? Like, how, wait. Okay. The 616 Miles Spider-Man.
So
jumped into the Ultimate.
No. So the 616 is a grown man in his like early 40s. Who is a associate of the Kingpin.
Oh. Okay.
Yes. And he goes and basically takes over the Ultimate Earth. Like, he comes back, and he's got Giant Man's suit, Captain America's shield. He has somehow domesticated the Green Goblin.
My god.
Yeah, it's a lot. He calls himself Ultimatum.
Okay. He didn't need to go say that. Yep. He didn't need to go doing that. Yep. Doing that. Because I've gone to a little bit of a hole lately, so I've been reading... Not reading, but I've been looking up, like, stories to like, look into, and, like, the worst stories. You didn't even call himself the Ultimatum. Now we don't like him at all.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's some good stuff, though.
I'm sure. I definitely want to check it out at some point, because I don't hear enough about, you know, like the Miles comic book stuff.
So, the problem... So, I had to stop myself from getting into an argument with dorks on the internet last week, because somebody said that the reason that Western comics don't sell well is because of forced diversity. In reality...
What the fuck?
They're forcing diversity. No, the reason that Western comics don't sell well is because they're like a fucking impossible wall to get into.
Yep, exactly.
Like, I just want to compare how easy it is to get into manga versus comic books. If I want to read My Hero Academia, I download the Shonen Jump app, I pay Viz Media $2, and I start at My Hero Academia chapter 1.
That's it.
If I want to get into Spider-Man, I pay Marvel $10 to use Marvel Unlimited, and I could start at The Amazing Spider-Man number 1, but there are like 5 Amazing Spider-Man volumes now, or I think there's 3 now. So let's say I want to start from the beginning. So I start at The Amazing Spider-Man number 1, you don't even start at that. You start at Amazing Fantasy number 15, and then you move on to The Amazing Spider-Man. And then, after a few years of it just being The Amazing Spider-Man, a few decades, it's The Spectacular Spider-Man. As a side book, there are 2 concurrent stories that sometimes have something to do with each other, other times don't. Then I got to read his appearances in the Fantastic Four stuff. Yeah, read his appearances in X-Men titles. Then you have to add. Then you got to read Secret Wars. And you got to read all these different things. You got to read the Infinity Wars, the Infinity Gauntlet. You got to read him becoming a member of the Fantastic Four. You got to read him becoming an Avenger. Then there's the Clone Saga. And there's all these different books and all these different spinoffs. You got to read Venom. You got to read Spider-Girl, which takes place in an alternate timeline. Like, there's so much shit happening at any given time.
Yeah, that's what really, like, hell, got me.
You're getting into X-Men. There are 5 X-Men books right now.
Oh no. Like, Emma told me that. Now I'm overwhelmed.
Because there's X-Men, there's House of X, I think House of Powers are done. There's X-Men, there's
X-Force.
X-Force, there's Excalibur, there's Exiles, like, there's always so many of these different things. If I want to read Batman, cool, you can start with Batman. But then you got to read Detective Comics. You got to also read Nightwing to get, like, for full stories, sometimes they'll do a book that is happening in 4 things at the same time. So it'll be,
what the shit?
It's like next month, or for the next 2 months, if you want the story that started in Batman, you have to also read Detective Comics. You have to also read Nightwing. You'll have to also read Robin. You'll have to also read Batgirl. You'll have to also read Justice League.
Like, it's overwhelming as fuck. And that's part of the reason why it took me so long to get into Western comics. It's,
right.
You know. Like, I'm still trying to figure it out.
Like, especially if you want to read them as they come out, because now it's like I have to buy all these different books just to read this one fucking story. That's fucking stupid.
Yep. It's difficult, because, like, I don't understand, like,
I think once they reached a point where it's like, we're putting a checklist of all the titles that are coming out that are related to this story, they jump the shark.
Yeah. Because, like, you have to, like, fucking plan out reading something, which you shouldn't have to do. Like, when it comes to, like, with JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, you know, you read all, don't skip any parts, but you go through the parts, you know, part 1, part 2, part 3, part 4. I don't have to, like, fucking, like, part 4.5, you know, part 5.5, and they're running concurrently, and I have to fucking, like, figure stuff out. Like, oh, this character shows up in this one, but they're a little bit older or something. I don't know.
It's one continuous story.
And exactly.
You can just read them as individual parts. This is Stone Ocean. Yeah. This is Golden Wind. This is
Unbreakable.
Cool.
Awesome.
Like, I want to touch on it briefly. I've been reading Hajime no Ippo. You know how I did that? I started reading Hajime no Ippo from chapter 1, and I'm going to keep going until I get caught up.
There you go.
The problem with, like, the characters, like, these people of color, the gay characters, all these different things that are not just white man, straight white man character, is that a lot of times they're written really reductively. They're written really like ham-fisted because, again, the people writing these stories are not people who have lived these experiences. They are people who have no frame of reference for these things.
So they make the things that shouldn't be focused on, and not just focused on, but like with a fucking microscope. Like, let's talk about this, yeah, and let's focus on this aspect of the character. When I'd rather focus on, I don't know, like I was playing the Miles Morales video game. It's fucking great, and brings up a little bit about, oh, you know, we should set up some music sometime. You know, him and Genki are talking on the phone about like some music. Oh, it's fucking cool. You know, just a little thing. Oh, we know sign language. Oh, that's yeah, cool. It's like it's little things. Like, you know, him being in,
become these intentionally or not, they do get reduced to either a stereotype or a talking point, and like it sucks. Like, one thing that I feel like there, like Miles' whole character until this point has been stuff that I feel like he should have, they were trying to make a point and missed it.
Totally. Totally. Like back when he started.
Yeah. Like their hearts were in the right place, but they didn't have they were in the wrong direction. Like, one of Miles' first stories in 616 is that someone finds out that Miles is black. They see his skin from his costume being ripped, and it's one of his classmates, who is also like a vlogger. Danica, she's in the game, isn't she?
She's in the game, yeah.
So Danica is like, I'm going to get to the bottom of who this black Spider-Man is, because it's, you know, she's like, it's really important, and representation is important. And Miles is like, what the fuck? What the fuck? Come on.
He's like, I don't want to be known as the Black Spider-Man.
Yes. And right message, wrong messenger.
Exactly.
Because here's the thing. If I wrote that character and I said, look, why do I... almost the same words. Why do I have to have the qualifier? He doesn't have to be white Spider-Man. Why can't I just...
Literally.
Like, I understand that it's important to people, but I don't want people to just think of me as the black guy who is Spider-Man, because that would suck.
Then you're just now literally
there's this just... expectation on me. Now there's this extra lens on me, and I don't like
it. Yep. Doesn't need to be the case.
Right. And Bendis was the wrong person to write that story.
Definitely. I love in the game, it's very, like, he gets off the bus, or he gets out of the subway, and he's walking by someone, like, painting on the side of a building, and he's like, you know, hey, where's the other Spider-Man? Like, oh, the character says something about how, like, he doesn't know him, or he's not really, like, either that, or just doesn't feel him, you know, because he has a soft spot for that Spidey, and he goes, hey, just leave room for the other one, you know, who knows, you know. But it's not what I love is that, you know, his race isn't like brought up, you know, his obviously, like, his mom talks to him in Spanish, and yes, you know,
they celebrate Miles's heritage and his culture without reducing him to just being his racial
identity. Exactly. Like, okay, you walk throughout his house in the game, and there's Puerto Rican flags everywhere.
Yes.
Not everywhere, but like here and there, and his mom talks to him in Spanish and stuff, but it's not like, it's like they're just a cute little family in is it Queens or Brooklyn? Brooklyn?
So Peter's in Queens. I think in the game they put Miles in Harlem.
Yeah, no, Miles they did.
Yeah, like he's supposed to have moved to Harlem because Miles is from Brooklyn.
Yeah. So you know, oh, it's just like this cute little family stuff. It's during the holiday season, so it's very cozy. You know, it's just like, it's just nice. It's just nice. So yeah, back to your point though, it's crazy. I didn't know that they went that route in like one of his first 616 stories that, you know, yeah, they comment on that point.
And like, it's a point I agreed with, but it's felt weird.
Yeah, definitely.
So it is, we've been running for an hour 40. So
an hour 40, yep. Yeah, we sure have.
I will save the Mass Effect talk for next time. I just want to very quickly, before we get out of here, talk about last night, or I guess it'll be 2 days ago when this goes up, because it is Tuesday. Oh my God.
Are you talking about the A-dubs? We're talking about the A-dubs.
Double or nothing. I just want to touch on a couple things very briefly. One, I liked the show. I have
actually... Okay.
Huh?
I said, oh, okay, because I was wondering like how you felt about it. I saw little things through up the Twitter
grapevine. I overall did like the show.
Okay.
But there are things that bothered me very greatly.
Oh, they're big butts.
Yeah, they're big butts. Number one, the Young Bucks retained the AEW World Tag Team titles over Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston.
What? Really?
Yes.
Nightmare.
Yes. So someone pointed out to me there are a couple possibilities of where they go from here, and I'm cool with those possibilities. That being said, this was the first of two times on this show where I got invested in the story and saw it going one way because it's the way that it felt like it should go, only for it to go the complete other direction. And not that there's necessarily anything inherently wrong with that in wrestling. I think being surprised is a good thing. It keeps you interested when the story doesn't
Come up
the way that you think it will. That being said, when the people that I like are constantly losing big matches to guys who I know are executives of the company, that stinks.
Absolutely. Like... I'm surprised that Eddie Kingston and Moxley aren't like fucking
entitled. They got screwed. They got screwed, cheated. And so they, you know, it is what it is. They might get another shot or something or go out for revenge, which will probably the likely scenario is that the two of them will team up with Frankie Kazarian, who has recently been split off from Christopher Daniels after the Young Bucks won a match that forced them to stop tag teaming.
What? That's awful. It's really sad.
Yes. It was very emotional. Daniels bled like a stuck pig in that match.
Fucking bet he did. He's all about that shit.
Daniels, he takes a super kick into the post, and when he comes up, he is covered in blood. There's so much blood.
My God.
So Kazarian is like, you guys, basically the implication is that Daniels is retiring. It hasn't been said for sure, but it's like, we are meant to believe that Christopher Daniels is retired.
Yes.
So I can see them doing a thing, because there are five members of the Elite, or it's the Elite plus the, so it's the Young Bucks, Kenny, and the Good Brothers. So I can see them doing like some kind of five-way match, or some 5-on-5 match with Hangman, or not Hangman in this case, but I think Hangman is the one who takes the belt off Kenny. But I think it's you do Moxie and Kingston, Kazarian, and you either do Pac and Penta, or some combination of Pac and Orange Cassidy against
against the Elite. I think that could happen and be cool on like a special episode of Dynamite or something. I think that either they're going to put the belts on, because like somebody's got to take those fucking belts off the Young Bucks. I don't know who it is, and I think it's
either
you do. You either have Santana and Ortiz, the former LAX, take it, or you have Dark Order, Uno and Grayson, take it off.
Grayson, oh my god, I forgot they're on fucking AEW now.
Yeah, it's because they very rarely team up on regular AEW TV. Like the normal tag team for the Dark Order is John Silver and Alex Reynolds.
Yeah.
I could see Dark Order taking the belts from them, but I don't know what babyface team the Young Bucks have not beaten yet. And so it's like, well, this sucks. The other match that made me go, this sucks, was Cody Rhodes versus Anthony Ogogo.
Oh my god, yeah, I heard about that fucking match.
In the build-up to this match, it didn't make it, like, it legit did not click in my head that Cody was doing this whole I love America, my country, you know, warts and all. It didn't click in my head that he was doing this because it was Memorial Day weekend, literally until Saturday.
Yeah, no. Like, I literally, when I woke up this morning, I was like, it's Memorial Day?
Yeah, exactly. It didn't occur to me until then, like, until Saturday. Oh, tomorrow is the day before Memorial Day.
He went full Homelander. It was really weird. Yes,
Cody is dressed like the Homelander, which tells me he did not actually watch that show.
No, he didn't. He doesn't realize that
the Homelander is a fascist.
He's a fascist, and he's literally the clone of fascist. Sorry for spoiling it, but you know.
Whatever, I'm not watching
it. Me neither. yeah.
Like, what the I watched fuck was enough that about? To know that's not a good dude. That's not a guy you should be dressed as.
I think what a Dave like. And like,
it doesn't make sense to me that Anthony Ogogo has been built up on AEW television, on Dark and on Dynamite, as being a dude who can beat you with one punch. He punched a guy in the stomach, and that dude could not answer the referee's 10 count.
I saw that. That was fucking awesome.
He wrestled one of Billy Gunn's son. I want to say it was Austin Gunn. He wrestles Austin Gunn and punches him in the stomach 3 times, and he doesn't get back up. The match opens, he punches Cody in the stomach, and hits an Olympic slam on him. That should have been the finish. Because, like, in the build-up to this match, it just felt weird. Like, Cody's doing all this, like a nationalist, I love America, no matter what, blah, 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 blah. And Ogogo's like, dude, people in this country can't afford to get sick because they can't afford health care.
But I love America.
And Cody's like, Cody's getting out here and he's going,
white and black American princess.
Huh?
His
weird promo. Yeah, he's talking about his biracial daughter.
His biracial daughter.
His biracial unborn daughter. He's talking about how proud he is of the city of Atlanta for coming so far since segregation.
Dude, I was fucking floored.
Like, dude, my mom lived in Atlanta in the 80s. Like, it has not come that far.
No.
Put it simple, the Atlanta Braves moved out of Atlanta to get closer to the white people after all the white people moved out of Atlanta when black people started moving there.
That's fucking crazy.
Like, Atlanta is the biggest case for white flight in the United States. I cannot think of another city that where it's maybe certain parts of Chicago, right? How Chicago is still basically segregated. Because when black people started moving from the south into the south and west sides of Chicago, all the white people said, let's get the fuck out of here. And they moved up to Wrigleyville. They moved out to the east side. They moved out to the north suburbs. to Northwest Indiana. They got the fuck out of there.
That's kind of the history of Long Island, because I've been living here, what, 3 years, and it's like, you fucking see, like, the segregation. Like, people, like, a lot of black folks will be living out west, and most of the white people have kind of started moving out east towards the Hamptons, it seems like.
Yeah.
I'm like, ooh, interesting. I see what's going on. I'm
curious how that happens.
Like,
it's, that was apparently, like, focus group tested, that fucking promo, and, like...
Are you kidding me?
I'm dead serious.
What the fuck?
And, like, it's one of those things where, because Cody insists that, like, it's a very... It probably is, honestly, a small, like, a very loud minority of people. Like, I think the people who are going to AEW shows, like the AEW diehards, they're super into it. Rah-rah USA, because they're in fucking Jacksonville, Florida. Right?
Yeah.
Well, as I say, as a person from Florida, you can attest.
Yeah. I'll fucking pan. The fucking panhandle. Like,
if you say USA, USA enough, people will just go, whoa, and ignore everything else you're saying.
Yep.
And so, like, Agogo's getting up and going, like, your people here can't afford healthcare. People here can't afford an honest living, you know, and he's the heel. And people are going
fucking crazy.
People the whole time are going, how am I supposed to boo this guy? Right? Yep. Like he's got a great story written all over him. He's 78% blind in his left eye.
Like, how, like, is it supposed to, do you think that they fucked up, like, a lot when it came to the promos and stuff for this, where I guess we're just not getting that Cody is supposed to be a bad guy, but doesn't realize he's a bad guy?
So here's the thing, that would be a great wrinkle for that character. That would be
an
outstanding thing for that character, is that Cody Rhodes, the character, is a self-absorbed dickhead and doesn't realize it.
It's like Homelander.
Yes. You know what the best version of this character is? It's Bo Dallas in 2014.
Oh my God.
Bo Dallas. That was his whole thing, was that he thought that everyone loved him and everyone was like, shut up. Go away. And it would be great if this character was on purpose, or if Cody leaned into it, but he refuses. It's like, a big part of it is that he's definitely trying to get footage for this fucking reality show that he and Brandy are doing, which is why on a random episode of Dynamite, they did a gender reveal for their unborn child.
Are you kidding me? They did a fucking gender reveal in AEW.
It's like, Cody Rhodes is a special announcement tonight. And then Cody
does it's a girl.
Yes. He does his big, long entrance with his elaborate pyro and all this shit. And then it's just to say, we have an announcement to make. And then on the screen it says, it's a girl. And pink pyro goes off. And it's like, woo, congratulations, Cody. Like, a lot of it is that they're trying to, that was just so they can get the footage for the TV show. A lot of stuff they do with the Cody character so he can get these things for the TV show. And that's absolutely what this feud with Anthony and Gogo was. But, like, man, it was the wrong decision. Because I feel like nobody gains anything from these things with Cody. Just, like, nobody gains anything, like, from this. I don't think they lose. I don't think Mox and Kingston lose anything by losing to the Young Bucks. But I feel like guys like Phoenix and Pentagon, they are in that company so that they can beat all the jabrones and then lose to the Elite.
Yep.
Like,
that's it.
And it sucks because I really like those guys.
And that's part of the reason why I don't watch it. I feel like it's just kind of this vehicle for the Elite and for, yes, like, Cody. So it's just
four guys who were so scared of the prospect of going to WWE and getting their shine blocked four guys who are so scared of going to WWE and being just another guy on the roster, who are now making everyone else, whether they are doing it on purpose or not, they are making everyone else just another guy on the roster.
Yep.
Like,
and it's going to bite them, obviously, eventually. But
here's the thing. I think as long as they pay this stuff off at the end of the summer, they can make it work. But it can't be the way that it goes. We can't be having the same conversation a year from now.
Because the writing's on the wall at that point. If you're really going to keep that kind of thing going,
like, it occurred to me watching it, like, man, they might really have Kenny beat Hangman at All Out. Which is the wrong move 110,000%.
100%.
Now that they're running shows with crowds again, now that they're definitely going to be doing All Out in Chicago, Hangman coming back 2 years later after losing to Chris Jericho in the main event of the first All Out in 2019, Hangman coming back and beating his former tag team partner, who at that point will have not lost a match in 2 years.
He hasn't lost a match. Kenny Omega has not lost a match.
They had a graphic on screen during the match, or when Kenny did his entrance. It said 600 has not lost a singles match since in 638 days. I did the math.
Oh,
it comes out as August 31st, 2019. That is All Out.
Fuck off. They
made sure that you realize he hasn't lost a singles match. There was a big chunk of last year where he was working, almost exclusively working tag team matches with Hangman. Kenny was a tag guy for the better part of, like, a year. And his last loss, like, his last singles loss, technically does not count against his record because it was an unsanctioned match against Moxley.
I remember that.
So Moxley won the match, but it was unsanctioned, so it doesn't count against his record.
Smart.
Yes, this is smart. I'll give it to him. It's pretty smart.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
Easy way to beat somebody without, like, it counting.
Yeah.
I think that if the person who breaks that undefeated streak isn't Hangman, there are two people they can do it with. Hangman and Orange Cassidy. And I think it has to be Hangman.
Absolutely.
And I think they're smart enough to recognize that. I think they are self-aware enough to recognize that. But, like, so, like, Kenny, I think, is, like, the guy that you can trust to, like, I think he knows what he's doing in this situation. And I think when those guys, when the Young Bucks lose the belts eventually, when Hangman beats Kenny for the belt eventually, I think that it is going to get the exact reaction that those guys wanted to get. And I'm excited for them to get there. I've just, the road to this point has been so exhausting as a viewer.
Sure, it sounds like it. And I'm hesitant to watch it, but hell, I'm unfortunately in the mood for wrestling right now, so
watch
I might.
It the way that I do, which is that I watch it and pay a lot more attention to the undercard than I do to the main card. Like, I like a lot of guys in their mid card. Like, I realize the people that I care about are not the people that I think AEW wants me to care about.
Yeah.
Like, my favorite guys in that company, other than Orange Cassidy, I think they know that people like Orange Cassidy.
Oh, yeah. He's over as hell.
Hangman, who is, like, they've having a holding pattern until, I'm guessing, until July. I think middle of next month, they will probably officially heat him back up to working with Kenny. Hangman, I dig. Death Triangle, I really like. Moxley and Kingston, I really like. And I really want them to get it together in the women's division. And I think they are. I think they're steering the ship the right way with Britt Baker as the new champ.
Dude, Britt Baker fucking rules.
Britt Baker kicks ass, dude.
fucking love Britt Baker. What the fuck?
DMD.
DMD. Oh yeah, she's a dentist. I forgot about that. Dentist. Fucking love it.
I think they are steering the doing a lot of things that I do like. I just, oh my god, can Cody Rhodes please fuck off? I think I can stomach the stuff with the Elite because I know that that stuff's going to pay off in a way that I'll enjoy later. But oh my god.
This Cody is just like jerking himself off in the ring and making people watch it.
The problem is he thinks he's like this massive fucking babyface.
He is nutting all over the mat right now. But,
and I think that
and he thinks everyone loves
AEW, it. He was like this huge babyface. I think that he was the character then that he thinks he is now. But enough time has passed where people realize there's like a formula. A guy gets hot, a guy wins a lot of matches, and then he faces Cody, and Cody beats him.
Yep.
Because Cody just beats him, and that's that.
He became what he hated, Triple H.
So, I get why people are comparing him to Triple H. I, since the beginning, have had another comparison that I feel is more accurate. And then I will leave you guys here, because we are at 2 hours.
Oh, we are? Oh, my God.
Cody Rhodes is not Triple H.
What? Cody Rhodes
is Jeff Jarrett.
Shut the fuck up. You're right.
The big difference is that Jeff Jarrett was like, nah, I'm booking myself to win the world title, and also had the like self-awareness to be a heel.
Yep. Oh my god. Yeah, that's a hell of a way to end this.
Cody is Jeff Jarrett. Thank you guys for hanging out with us this last couple hours. Thank you, Mo, for hanging out. I love doing this. This is always
like a fucking highlight. Like this is one of the highlights of my week. Getting to sit down and talk to you for just a couple hours, shoot the shit. It's always a blast.
It is hot as hell in my apartment. I gotta go turn on my AC. Y'all have a good one. And until the next time, our schedules match up and we've got shit to say. Good night from whatever show this is.
Godspeed.